Welcome to a burning fire, Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. But when ye sin so against the brethren and wound their weak conscience, ye sin against Christ. 1 Corinthians 8 and verse 12. This was written by the Apostle Paul in the context of his teaching about eating meats. The church in Corinth obviously had some problem about what they could eat and what they could not eat. The eighth chapter begins by introducing the subject of meats, and especially meats of animals that had been offered to idols. He told them that it was of no real consequence whether they ate such or not. There is but one God, says verse 4. But the problem stemmed from the fact that not everyone had the knowledge that eating meat from animals offered to idols was of no significance. Some considered that to be paying some kind of homage to idols. And in this they were mistaken. But they still held to that misconception. And it violated their consciences to eat that meat. And it offended them to see their brethren eat it. Others knew that it mattered not one way or another whether they eat, and they had no conscience about it. But for them to go ahead and eat without respect to the feeling of their weak and unlearned brethren would constitute an offense that ought to be avoided. Eating meat did not commend them to God nor separate them from God. But if a brother thought it did, those who knew better were to be considerate of him while he learned. They should not offend the weak brother regarding meats without consideration to the weakness of another, lest it cause him to fall away and be lost. To exercise what was one's rights without consideration for the weak was to sin against brethren. Sinning against brethren was defined as sinning against Christ. Just like doing good to brethren is doing good to Christ, we learn in Matthew 25. But this was but one way a Christian could sin against his brother. There are other ways, and we want to consider some of them. Now, we need not belabor the point that rendering physical harm against a brother certainly would be sinful, but this is so obvious. To steal from him, to physically injure him, to destroy his properties, to kill him, certainly this is to sin against him. And to treat him in the fashion that the brothers of Joseph treated him as they sold him into Egypt, it would be sinning against our brethren. But this is not the kind of thing that most are likely to do. We sin against our brethren, however, in many other ways, by neglecting to do for them the things that are needful. Neglect is as much a sin as the sin of commission. Sins of omission are the sins that we fail to do when we ought to be doing right. To him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, James 4:17, to him it is sin. We sin against brethren when and if we forsake them in times of trouble. And Jesus answering said, a certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves, which stripped him of his raiment and wounded him and departed, leaving him half dead. And by chance there came down a certain priest that way, and he saw him, and he passed by on the other side. And likewise a Levite, when he was at the place, came and looked on him and passed by on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion on him, and went to him, and bound up his wounds, pouring in oil and wine, and set him on his own beast, and brought him to an inn, and took care of him. And on the morrow, when he departed, he took out 2 pence, and gave them to the host, and said unto him, take care of him, and whatsoever thou spendest more, when I come, I will repay thee. Which now of these three thinkest thou was neighbor unto him that fell among the thieves? And he said, he that showed mercy on him. Then said Jesus, go and do thou likewise. Luke chapter 10, verses 30 through 37. Now while the priest and the Levite did no harm to the man who fell among thieves, did not they sin against him by refusing to help him in his hour of distress? And this is what happened to Jesus when the time of his arrest and mock trials were immediately before him. In the hour when he needed the encouragement and the support of his disciples more than ever before, they forsook him. Matthew 26:56 reads, then all the disciples forsook him and fled. Demas forsook Paul when Paul was suffering in prison because of his preaching of the gospel. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 10, Paul wrote, "Give diligence to come unto me shortly, for Demas forsook me, having loved this present world." Friend, are we not taught to bear ye one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ? Galatians 6 and verse 2. Paul told brethren to weep with those that weep, Romans 12 and verse 15, as well as rejoice with those that rejoice. People in trouble need sympathy and understanding and help, somebody to support them and to help them get through it. Therefore, we should comfort the faint-hearted, the discouraged, and the unfortunate. In Acts 20 and verse 35, Paul told the elders of Ephesus, "In all things I gave you an example that so laboring you ought to help the weak." One of the reasons we are to work is in order to give to him that needeth, Ephesians 4 and verse 28. James 1:27 reads, "Pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction, and to keep himself unspotted from the world." In 1 John 3 and verse 17, "But whoso hath this world's goods and beholdeth his brother in need, and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how doth the love of God abide in him?" Do we not also sin against our brethren by setting a bad example before them? To have the attitude that what we do is nobody's business but our own, or thus to fail to recognize the power of influence. We do not live in a vacuum, separated from other people. Others influence us, and we influence others. Romans 14:7 says, "For none of us liveth to himself, and none dieth to himself." What I do is, in a sense, your business, to the extent that it influences you. And this same principle works the other way. What I allow my children to do that might have an influence on your children that would be harmful, that becomes your business. And while we're all accountable to God for everything, are we not also responsible to each other? When a person drinks alcoholic beverages, he not only sins against himself and God, he sins against those around him because of the influence he manifests. He hurts his children as well as his neighbors. We see a demonstration of this before our eyes in the lives of people all the time. When we forsake the worship services of the church, we're telling others that it's unimportant to attend in spite of the command of God to attend. And this has had an influence that encourages people to defy the teaching of God. There are numerous evils by which we can influence another to do wrong. Let us not therefore judge one another any more, but judge ye rather this, that no man put a stumbling block in his brother's path or an occasion of falling. Romans 14 and verse 13. Many of us are likely as not good stewards of our influence as God wants us to be. "But whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and that he were drowned in the depth of the sea." Matthew 18:6. "Let no man despise thy youth, but be an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity." 1 Timothy 4:12. An example we cannot escape from being. But what kind of example are we? Jesus said, "Even so let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven." It is Christ-like to set a good example for others. "Hereby we know that we are in him. He that saith he abideth in him ought himself also to walk even as he walked." 1 John 2:5 and 6. Christ is our example to follow. 1 Peter 2:21. Would he lead someone astray? Did he care how he lived before others? Neither should we be negligent regarding the kind of example we set. Yes, we can sin against others by being a bad example. And we can sin against a fallen Christian by not trying to recover him. Paul wrote, "Brethren, if any man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted." Galatians 6 and verse 1. James wrote, "Brethren, if any of you do err from the truth and one convert him, Let him know that he which converteth a sinner from the error of his way shall save a soul from death and shall hide a multitude of sins. That we do have a responsibility toward brethren who stumble and fall is very evident. We might be inclined to think they ought to get right without our help. Well, they ought to know what to do all right, and they know they have sinned. We might have the attitude, let them attend to the matter. And this is true to some extent. But it does not take into consideration how we need to do what we can to help recover them. So many have fallen by the wayside, and nobody has ever said anything to them in trying to win them back again. The fact that they have drifted and fallen is proof that they need help. If they did not need help, they would never have forsaken the truth in the first place. They may know what is right, but they may need the assistance of somebody else to help them get to do that right. We cannot simply pass by on the other side when someone falls away. One of the duties of elders of the church is to exercise the watch care for souls of those in their flock. Yet sometimes we see people neglect their duties for weeks and weeks, and no elder says or does anything to reach them. But elders are not the only ones who have responsibilities to reach the fallen. Every Christian must have the same concern for his brethren. And obviously we sin against our brother if we hate him, or find fault, or gossip, or backbite, or lie against him, undermine his good name and damage his reputation when there is no cause for such. But we may also sin by failing to preach the gospel to other people. Yes, brethren need to hear the gospel as well as those who have never come to the Lord. Christ gave the Great Commission when he said, "Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature," Mark 16:15. Paul said he wanted to go to Rome to his brethren, that he might preach the gospel to them. Brethren need reminding. And part of the gospel is edifying and building up brethren in the holy faith. We must see to it that the gospel is preached, lest we become guilty of indifference toward those who cannot be saved without it. The fact that brethren need the gospel dispels the silly notion that the gospel is for those outside of Christ and doctrine is only for those in him. In the opening chapters of God's book, we read about Cain who murdered his brother Abel. God came to Cain, and asked him where Abel was. It was not that God did not know what happened, but he came to Cain to impress the enormity of his crime and that he did have a responsibility toward his brother. But Cain pretended to be innocent. To commit a deed that is sinful is reprehensible, but what is almost as reprehensible is to pretend to be innocent about it. Cain asked the question, "Am I my brother's keeper?" And in this way he hoped to relieve himself of any responsibility toward Abel or what he had done against him. Do we not learn from this, dear friend, from God's reaction, from the teaching that begins at this point in human history and continues through the rest of the Bible, that the answer to the question, "Am I my brother's keeper, is an obvious and unmistakable yes, we are our brother's keeper. We dare not pretend that we have no duty regarding those around us. Especially are we to be concerned for our brethren in the Lord, for they belong to God. What a painful thing it must be to the Father above when his children have not love one for the other. We should guard against sinning against anyone, but especially those who are of the household of faith. This has been A Burning Fire. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.